At Radke Land and Cattle, we proudly use Advanced Ag Products BioReg Plus with its proprietary coating technology for slow release of essential oils in the lower GI tract. BioReg Plus products are designed and proven to help beef producers with overall performance, feed intake, gut integrity, nutritional support, immunity, fertility, and reproductive health. With the rising cost of beef cattle production today, having optimal performance and minimizing health challenges in every head counts. Learn more at bioreg.com and tell them Amanda sent you. Welcome to the Heart of Rural America podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Radke, an American cattle rancher and motivational speaker, raising my kids and writing children's books in South Dakota. There's a David and Goliath story unfolding in agriculture today. And I don't know about you, but my money is on the underdog, the hardworking folks who value faith, family, freedom, and their farming communities. This show will highlight the untold stories of these resilient and determined families who I have the great pleasure of meeting in my travels across this nation as an agricultural speaker. It is my hope that their stories will remind us to live with great courage because we are not alone in this fight to keep producers on the land and meat, dairy, and eggs on the dinner table. Now let's hit the dusty trail together as we uncover the heart of rural America.
Welcome to your show. Here's my mom, Amanda Radke.
With the health further ado, I'm going to introduce Amanda. She's kind of a pioneer when it comes to property rights, and I will let her speak on her own behalf, but she's brought some great Patreon friends with her that are going to say a few words also. So without further ado, I will give you the microphone and get this out of your way.
Yes, sir. Thank you. All right. Well, what a great evening. You know, I don't know how you guys feel, but I can tell there's a lot of optimism in the room tonight. It's a great day to be a Republican in South Dakota, is it not? 4 years ago, a bad actor and a bully came into the state of South Dakota. That bad actor decided they could come onto our land and force their way where they were not welcome. For 3 years, South Dakota landowners have shown up at the state capitol asking our legislators for three things. Number one, to protect our God-given, constitutionally protected private property rights. Number two, maintain local control because government is best close to home by community members who actually live there. And number three, absolutely no eminent domain for carbon pipelines. This year we got it done. Can the legislators who are part of that please stand up so we can recognize them? These are servant leaders who did walk the walk, talk and got it done for the people of South Dakota. Thank you so much. This story goes back quite a ways, and I guess I got involved in it really kind of by accident. A little bit about me. I'm really nobody. I'm a farmer and rancher, a mother of four, and the Lord has blessed me with some opportunities to speak across the country and around the world, trying to share the stories of the people who are not represented, who are not addressed by our politicians, who are not really thought of, the untold stories of the people who keep this nation free and fed. I've spoken in front of the United Nations, I've spoken in Washington, D.C., and really from coast to coast, focusing on agricultural policy and how it impacts farmers and ranchers, how it keeps farmers and ranchers on the land doing what they do best, which is being stewards of the land, stewards of the livestock, and ultimately stewards of the people that they aim to serve. But all of the work that I've done across the country never could have prepared me for this carbon pipeline coming into my backyard. I first got involved in this and heard about it when an elderly widow named Rita Brown gave me a call. Rita was contacted by this pipeline company and they wanted her to sign an easement. Rita was not interested in signing that easement. And when she said, "I'm not interested," they said, "You sign this easement now or we'll go through on your land and put it wherever we want, no matter what you say. Rita was on the phone with me for 2 hours crying and saying, can you please use your platform to help tell the story of what's going on in South Dakota? At that time, I was just starting to hear about this company. I didn't really know what was going on. It was confusing because there were some ag associations that somehow were telling me this was a good deal when it clearly looked like a Green New Deal. So I'm trying to information gather, and then it was an avalanche of phone calls. It was landowners, fifth, sixth generation landowners, people who have been on the land since before statehood began. They're all saying the same thing. This out-of-state, foreign-backed, privately owned company is coming into the state of South Dakota, and they want to do the craziest thing. They want to bury plant food, the fundamental building block of life. How ridiculous is that? And so I realized I had to get off the fence and I had to get involved. And so really quite interesting, and I have very special guests here tonight to help me tell this story, because I knew I couldn't come West River with this message without having these guests with me. I met a guy named Mark Lopke, who is a farmer, rancher. We did a podcast together, and he told me the story of what was going on and that this was happening right there at home in McPherson County. And this landowner movement began with just a couple farmers getting together, making phone calls, getting organized, talking to each other after they haven't talked for many, many years, and coming together and spreading the word. And so since that first meeting with some of these great folks, a lot of things have happened. I'm here tonight because not only have we been in a battle against a carbon sequestration pipeline, actually a couple, but it has started something so big, so powerful, so moving that we are just getting started. And tonight I want to celebrate some of the victories. I want to talk to you guys about some of the lessons that we've learned along the way. Because the reality is what happened in eastern South Dakota is coming here. The tentacles are already here. The encroachment on your private property rights, whether it's your land, your livestock, your backyard, your home, they want to tax you to death and they want to take what they feel entitled to. And those are the two biggest problems facing the state of South Dakota. And I'm here to say to the establishment that wants to continue down that path, the days are done, it is done, your time is up. So I gotta say, as we fought this fight, and I had never even testified on a bill before. I speak across the country, I don't get nervous. I was nervous showing up in Pierre and testifying on these bills. My hands were shaking, my voice was shaking as you're looking at a committee of politicians who would roll out the red carpet for the lobbyists and look at the landowners and the South Dakota citizens who were there in their own time and their own dime, and they would look at you with absolute disdain and disgust. Like, why are you even here? You're not important. Why are you wearing plaid shirts and blue jeans here? Don't you know there's decorum? How ridiculous was that? And they would hear the pleas and the cries of the South Dakota citizens, and one by one, they would kill every single private property rights bill that we ever brought forward, one after the other, while the lobbyists cheered at us, like, look at what we can do here. We've got control. Something happened, though. They pushed the South Dakota citizens a little too far. And when they pushed us, something bigger even happened. SB 201 came along, and that bill was the most disgusting, egregious abuse of power that would have rubber-stamped this project, taken away local control, and given it all to the state to press the heavy hand of government down on we, the people. Let's not forget that this company sued 160 landowners, multiple counties, and even a PUC member. And they thought, well, we've got the legislators too, and we're gonna rig the game in our favor. And to add insult to injury, after they crammed A through what, M amendments onto this ugly, awful bill, SB 201, they had the audacity to put lipstick on a pig and call SB 201 the Landowner Bill of Rights. Are you kidding me? So they called it this Landowner Bill of Rights. And it was a wild thing because I saw this attitude that our land, our livelihoods, our traditions, our family businesses were up for sale to the highest bidder. And it did not matter that these were God-given inherent rights for our ability to own the land under our feet. And yet they sold us down the river, they called it a landowner bill of rights, and they told us it was good for us. The South Dakota people said, not so fast.
At Radke Land and Cattle, we proudly use Advanced Ag Products BioReg Plus. With its proprietary coating technology for slow release of essential oils in the lower GI tract, BioReg Plus products are designed and proven to help beef producers with overall performance, feed intake, gut integrity, nutritional support, immunity, fertility, and reproductive health. With the rising cost of beef cattle production today, having optimal performance and minimizing health challenges in every head counts. Learn more at bioreg.com and tell them Amanda sent you.
The Heart of Rural America is presented to you by CK6 Consulting Services. I have the great pleasure of working alongside the CK6 team, including Chris Earle, Wes Tiemann, and Cody Fleeman, and it's an honor to assist cattle producers as they strive to meet their business goals. With a purebred Angus specialization, we have a full slate of auction sales coming up as we work to maximize price discovery and capture true value for our clients and customers. Plus, let us help you identify your next herd sire for the upcoming breeding season. At CK6 Source, you'll find great customer service, fast shipping, and a focus on leading Angus genetics. Learn more about what we do at ck6consulting.com and ck6source.com. We would love to assist you any way we can. God bless.
And so SB201 came along, and there's many, many fighters in this room who were part of that effort. It was named RL21, and it was put on the ballot. That story is a story that the entire nation is watching. Because in 90 short days, we were required to get 17,500 signatures. In 90 days, 37,000 signatures were collected and dropped off in Pier. Yes. That's not to mention there were no paid circulators. This was 500 unpaid volunteers on their own time, on their own dime, from every county in the state of South Dakota, gathering, doing the work, and making sure we could get this on the ballot. Then the primary election happened, and we kicked out 13 of those politicians who voted for SB201. Retire, go home. And we replace them with true servant leaders, constitutionalists who believe in actually conserving. So no longer are South Dakota citizens going to buy the mailers that say I'm a common sense conservative and believe it's true. Now the South Dakota citizens are waking up, paying attention to the voter records and saying, actually, you're not who you say you are. And just because you put an R behind your name to get elected does not mean you are a Republican. And then the election happened. And I got to tell you that RL21 effort spanned across the state. Jim and Mark and Carla and so many of us went town to town spreading the word. City after city, having these little meetings in churches and bars and in barns and gymnasiums, wherever we could go to tell the story that we're protecting private property rights, we're maintaining local control, and we cannot let this rubber-stamped bill be a law in the state of South Dakota. And I'm so proud to say that when election time came, 65 of 66 counties with 59% of the vote voted our way, and we defeated RL21. We effectively told those politicians, not on our watch, that's not going to happen here in South Dakota. We may be open for business, but we are absolutely not for sale. After the November election, and we voted in President Donald Trump for his next term, many more things happened. We got to the leadership elections in Pierre, and we took over the House and the Senate for pro-private property rights, constitutional conservatives that led both House and Senate. They called it an avalanche, they called it a hurricane, whatever they called it, I was like, keep watching because we're just getting started. Then we had our GOP election. But 2 years ago, my dear friend Jim Eschenbaum wasn't even allowed to go to the meeting, and he is now your GOP chairman. That was after successfully leading the RL21 fight, which effectively told every politician in the state of South Dakota that we, the people, expect you to actually represent our interests in the state of South Dakota. And we, the Republican Party, actually expect our politicians to, I don't know, follow the party platform. So many victories have happened, it's hard to even stack them up and add them up. Yeah, are we tired of winning yet? Then the 100th legislative session happened. And there was a bill called HB 1052 that was introduced by my dear friends, Representative Carla Lenz and Senator Mark Lapke. That bill was simple. In 30 words or less, it said what needed to be done. While the gun was pointed at the heads of so many South Dakotans who for 4 years, their lives have been put on hold, the financial toll, the emotional toll, the ongoing stress. Heck, you guys probably didn't even know I have a family because I was always at pipeline meetings, but my husband Tyler is here tonight. Can you guys please give him a round of applause? For so many families just like mine, that's what it looked like. One member of the family going to pipeline meetings and one member of the family taking care of the ranch and the kids back home. And so I couldn't do what I was doing without Tyler being my backbone and my support in that. So we had a very important bill that was clean. It was simple. It said simply, no eminent domain for carbon dioxide pipelines. And I'm going to have these two come and talk about it here in just a moment. But the legislative session happened. There were 1,000 different ways that bill should have died. There were 1,000,000 attempts. Tina's laughing because she knows there were saboteurs within our party. There were people who absolutely did not want that bill to get to the governor's desk. But some very savvy, very smart, very clear-headed legislators said, no, this bill is going to get to the governor's desk. HB 1052 is the right thing to do, and it will absolutely have its day. And I don't know about you, but when we finally got that signature, the feeling of overwhelm and relief and joy and also sadness that it even had to get to this point was quite overwhelming. But the message is clear now. I think they think now that 1052 has been passed that the landowners will just go away. But my message is that we are just getting started. We have much work to do. I'm pretty sure there was a group here last week that tried to tell you they're going to speak for you and that nature is not partisan and that conservationism is a really cool thing. They can wrap it any way they want. They can put a bow on it, but it is the Green New Deal that they're pushing for. And I think South Dakota has been pretty clear on that. Not here, not today, not tomorrow, no way. A few things I've learned from this fight. Number one, I want to formally thank Summit Carbon Solutions because without them spending gobs of money, I wouldn't have found dear friends, patriots, and people who love this country, have great devotion to their faith, and are willing to get off the bench and fight for the government that actually serves the people. So thank you, Summit Carbon Solutions. I also want to thank them because without their help, we wouldn't be overturning the entire government in the state of South Dakota. No longer can they write a blank check for their economic development programs and say, we're going to enrich our friends and it's not going to benefit you at all, but that's what we're going to do here and you better like it. Those days are also done. So what happens next? I believe we have a lot of work ahead of us. I believe if we're going to maintain this momentum in every corner of the state, from east to west, north to south, we have to recognize that if we want a government that serves the people, we have to show up. What I learned during this pipeline fight is that everyone has time, talent, and treasures to give. It all looks a little bit different. How you serve might look different than how I serve. Some can write, some are organized, some can speak well, some can pass out signs and buttons and make t-shirts, some can do social media. But if we all do a little bit of something, if we all are committed to making sure that South Dakota remains South Dakota, and that when we say under God, the people rule, we can actually believe that is true, it's going to take each and every one of us to being committed to continue the work that's been started and understand that the second we get apathetic is the second they pounce. And I'm telling you today, as long as I have air in my lungs and a heart that beats, I am not going back to that feeling that we felt the last 3 years in Pierre. We are not going back. So I've talked long enough myself. I am honored to have two special guests with me who came from the eastern side of the state. First, I want to introduce Representative Carla Lems up to the stage with me. She is the first female speaker pro tem in the state of South Dakota. Give her a round of applause. She told me today, Carla has become a dear friend and confidant, a trusted individual in my life. I love her. We've been in the fight together for a long time. She told me today, she said, Amanda, even when I was a little kid in elementary school, I never liked a bully. If there's one person who can square up to a bully, it is Representative Carla Lems.
Yeah.
I also want to introduce my dear friend, Senator, freshman Senator Mark Lopke from Leola, South Dakota. Farmer, rancher, devoted husband and father. If you heard his speech on the Senate floor talking about 1052, you know without a fraction of a doubt that was God inspired and represented us all so well. Please give him a round of applause.
You guys know, as a beef girl, I take grilling very seriously around here. And I've been using Redmond Real Salt for over a decade to season my steaks and burgers. It's unrefined, ancient sea salt exactly as nature made it. It contains 60 plus naturally occurring trace minerals, and it truly brings out the best of the beef we raise at home on the ranch. This American family-owned business also focuses on livestock products. And at Radke Land and Cattle, we are proud to use the beneficial Redmond Real Salt minerals to get back to the basics and help our cattle improve fertility, immunity, and feed efficiency. It's natural, simple, and effective for people and livestock. Discover more at redmondagriculture.com and redmondlife.com and use code RADKE to save, or contact a local dealer and mention my name for a special discount. Working cattle can be stressful at times, but the job is made so much easier with equipment that is safe, strong, and simply designed. I highly recommend Real Tough Livestock Equipment for all your working facility needs. We just installed the deluxe chute at Radke Land and Cattle, and it has been an absolute game changer as we run cows through our chute during AI season. It's durable and easy to use, and it's made to last a lifetime. Real Tough offers a wide range of products, including calving barns, panels, loading chutes, tubs, alleys, and portable working systems. Manufactured in the U.S. of A., Real Tough is family-owned and operated. Their commitment to helping farm and ranch families truly exemplifies what this show is all about. Learn more at realtough.com, that's T-U-F-F, and be sure to tell them Amanda sent you to receive an extra bonus with your order. Let's get you some iconic green Real Tough equipment headed your way. I promise you're going to love it.
So now that I have these two up here, because I really felt I cannot come to Western South Dakota and tell this story without my two dear friends here, I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about some of the ins and outs of the legislative session and really how did we get this bill to the finish line. So Carla, I guess to start, I know people know you as like you've been in this pipeline fight, but I'd love to hear and have you tell everybody, how did you get involved in politics? What inspired you to run in the first place?
Well, believe it or not, it's been reported in the press that I got involved in politics because of the CO2 pipeline, which is not true. But it was one of the first things that I had to tackle. The reason that I got involved in politics, I was already involved somewhat with my county. I'm from Lincoln County, so I was involved in the GOP. I was doing all of those things. There was an empty seat in my district, and I had decided the time is right that I need to run. It was around that time the 2020 election had happened. I was very unhappy with what was going on in our federal government. The elections looked weird to me, and we know now that they were. I was very concerned about that. I was on the Central Committee and went to one of the Central Committee meetings. I was very concerned. I had asked our leader at the time, Dan Lederman, who we later found was involved with Summit Carbon Solutions. He was the chair of the GOP at the time, the state. And I said, what are we going to do to address at the Central Committee meeting the things that are happening in our federal government? January 6th had just happened, and it was very concerning to me. I just saw this turn that our country was taking, and I'm like, this is not okay. I was basically told, we're not going to worry about it. We support our Republicans that are in office and basically don't ask any questions. And I was like, okay, so can you be a card-carrying communist but yet be registered Republican and we're not going to ask any questions? That doesn't make any sense. We should all be holding each other accountable, whether it's in our party, whether it's in our church, whether it's in our families. We need to be who we say we are. And if we're not, we need to be able to call people out, because that's how we get duped. And so I ended up running. I remember at our Lincoln Day dinner in Lincoln County, it was a fun time. I got up and I announced that I was going to run. And I just had this heaviness that I felt at the time. And I was like, I got up and I said, we're having a good time here tonight and everything, but I feel like, guys, we better say what is really going on. We are facing, I believe, an onslaught of communism in our country. This is just beneath the surface, and we're all here partying. We better be serious about turning this thing around. I said, I'm going to run. I did, and I got in. Long story short, my very first year, we had two pipelines coming through our property, and I got the paperwork on my desk. It was about that same time, and I'm like, well, I looked at it. Guess what? I'm not against pipelines. I'm not against economic development. I'm not against ethanol. All the pictures, all the things they say about us that are not true. I just want to make sure that we say that to everybody. But I looked at that and I said, you know, this is the Green New Deal. Literally, I remember sitting at my desk thinking that. I set it aside and thought, I'm not interested. I don't want to participate in that. And yet here it came. I remember my first year, I was on the floor of the House. And who would come up and talk to me but this gentleman over here? He was not a senator at the time. He was a farmer from McPherson County. And he's like, would you be interested? Could you run a bill for us for eminent domain for this pipeline, saying, you know, no eminent domain? And I'm like, I am a freshman legislator. That is a huge heavy lift. All these people depending on me. I'll do it, but I'm like, I don't really know what I'm doing. And I do want to give a shout out to the people in the room that have helped with this effort. We got township people together. We got county people. Like Amanda said, we were meeting in all kinds of areas. But that very first year, I ran the bill, 1133. It was basically the same bill that we ran this year. It didn't get through. We did get it through the House, which was amazing. But it died in the Senate committee. And like Amanda said, I started to recognize as a new legislator, there are things happening here that are not right. We roll out the red carpet for the lobbyists, for the blue badges, we call them. And yet the people come to testify and they are looked down at. That is wrong. I saw it on so many levels, and the people started paying attention. Like you said, Summit Carbon Solutions, we should thank them because they woke up a sleeping giant. And the people that came on behalf of the pipeline started to pay attention to all of these other things, election integrity and transparency and government programs. They started to question what's going on and the attitudes of legislators that had been in there for a long time that were wrong. So we started to see those things, and there started to become a movement because the people started paying attention. And we had media groups start putting things out, and we started the film rolling. And other people in the state started watching that. And so again, and I want to say thank you to Representative Scott Odenbach. I want to say thank you to Representative Julie Auk, Tina Mullally, Julie Frymuel. I mean, I don't want to miss anybody, but so many of you, Heidi Engelhardt, Kelly Brack, throughout the room. But that bill failed the first time around. So then that summer is when we started to see Summit really on the move. And that's when we heard about Jared Vosley. And I'll let Mark talk more about that. But that is when we started to network and say, we've got to start getting our townships involved. We had a meeting down in Canton with that. But What really rolled it out was when this happened with Jared. We made a trip up to Leola, South Dakota, because we wanted to lay eyes on what was really going on. We thought outside of the box. This is not the normal things that legislators do, but we were like, let's do a road trip. I called Representative John Hansen. I'm like, you want to go on a road trip? He's like, let's go. And so we went up there. We met at the courthouse steps, and we had a rally. One of our first rallies, Mark's like, I'm never doing another rally. We've done that over and over and over. But again, fast forward. But what happened was, again, we woke up a sleeping giant, and we were able to then fast forward to today. We are able to stand here and say we got 1052 across the finish line, but it was because of the hard work of South Dakotans in every county. This was not just one organization doing this. There were multiple organizations working in tandem and also at the same time running campaigns trying to get new legislators in place so we could get leadership this year and have enough of a majority that we could get some of these things across the finish line. And I could go on and on and on, and I better stop. But I'm going to turn this over back to Amanda. We're here today, and we're not going anywhere.
That's right. Oh, Carla's totally right. As you look across the room, you can start counting the faces, and it literally is so many people. It took all of us to do the heavy lifting. It's hard to even describe how big this movement has gotten. The papers have called us a small vocal minority. I think they figured out that's a lie. They've tried to put us in a box that we're certain associations or we're activist groups or anything that they could possibly do to paint us in a certain light. But when it is everyday citizens from all walks of life coming to here, South Dakota, and saying this is the right thing to do for the people, it became so hard to ignore. Mark, I want to talk to you. I want to go back to the beginning. Carla mentioned that first meeting in Leola and Jared Bosley. And I think we always assume that people know Jared's story, but really, Jared's story was the catalyst for much of this. And it's so terrible it had to get that bad to start this, but can you bring us back to where it began for you and Jared and so many others?
Well, thank you, Amanda. I'd be glad to. I feel so at home here because after the legislative session, I've been back home wearing my Carhartts outside, chasing cows, building fence, working on machinery, because that's my passion. That's what I love to do. But I know Carla said it wasn't the carbon pipeline that got her into politics, unfortunately for me. The only thing I ever wanted to do in my life was be left alone and farm. We have the freedoms and the liberties per the Constitution that allow us to do that. And that's how I spent the majority of my adult life. Then all of a sudden, this project showed up, and we found out that the private property rights that we believed that we had in the state of South Dakota were not, in fact, there. And so it was because of that that I figured out you may not want to have anything to do with politics, but politics has everything to do with you. And if you weren't going to get involved, you weren't ultimately going to be able to have the freedom to decide what to do. And so we began on a small level. It started amongst all the neighbors in the area. We started talking to each other because these land agents would show up and talk about how 80% of your neighbors had signed up. And that was never the case. Small towns, small areas, rural towns like ours, people can communicate and most of the time tell you the truth. So I figured it out. I spelled a rat. So then we started holding community meetings, getting more awareness about it. And we thought, well, this will be over in 6 months. I can go back to what I'm doing. Found out that wasn't the case. Court cases started showing up. The incidences with the surveying per the Jared Bosley incident, which I was there that day. All the stories that you heard are in fact true. I was there. I lived it. We end up in court. We figured, well, you know, they're going to be able to do something here. Well, that's when a lot of us lost faith in the court system. Then they started showing up with surveyors with guns, armed guards. And then all of a sudden, here we are looking at our own property that we're not allowed to go on to. And when you talk to the sheriffs, they say that we're here to protect the company from you on your own property. Then they started handing out restraining orders that you couldn't even go out there and do anything. Well, that didn't sit very well. So the only thing we came to the conclusion is, if you don't like the law, you're going to have to change it. And so that's what we began the process. Carla was a great person to work with, and she stuck out through so many times all by herself that I can't believe the courage that Carla has. And before we give her a round of applause. That was year one. Year two, we went back at it. Representative Odenbach was such a great help. Senator Fry Mueller was a great help. I know I'm forgetting a few in this room, but we were unsuccessful again. But the great thing, the way that the state came together with RL21, that's what pushed things over the top. That's what got people to the polls that cared about the state of South Dakota, to the primary, got the folks elected, and got this done. And per Amanda's comments, I really feel that this is a building block. We're just beginning. We're just starting from here because I don't ever want to go back to the way things were. We became complacent. We thought everything would be okay. Don't get involved. You're only going to get yourself in trouble if you put yourself out there. I think that level of comfort shouldn't be done anymore. We should always stay vigilant in the state of South Dakota because it is the best state in the United States of America.
I want to talk a little bit about the committee hearings. One of the things that really stuck out to me is it never really was an association speaking on behalf of these bills. It was legislators, landowners, and South Dakota citizens. I think it was really special to have Speaker of the House John Hanson testifying on this bill. A lot of people don't realize, but John was a part of this since the very beginning. I had invited him out as well because he's been such a critical part of this fight, but he's at a fundraiser at his kid's school tonight, and I know dad of six kids, that's really important as well. And so we miss him tonight because I want to highlight some of the work that John has done. He was at that very first Leola meeting. He debated another carbon pipeline company. You guys might remember Navigator. He debated Navigator and they packed up their bags and left. He whooped their butts that day, so that was pretty awesome. And then to have the Speaker of the House come and testify on 1052 and say, this bill is the right thing to do. It was a pretty powerful moment in this fight. Carla, could you talk a little bit about the committee hearings and on the House side, how it went from the committee to the House, what the votes were? Because it was probably the easiest lift of the whole journey of this bill, but there was still definitely a lot that went on.
In 2022 or 2023, we had HB 1133, and that did pass the House at that time. Then it failed in the Senate. In 2024, we had HB 1219, which then Representative John Hanson actually carried that bill, very similar bill again to this, and then actually that failed. I don't even think we got it down to the floor. I think we tried to smoke it out. So then this year, what was the difference with this year? This year was we got all these new legislators, right?
Yeah.
And the other side recognized what happened. They were put on notice that if you don't get on board with this, we're gonna do the same thing to you. And so that's what happened. And so, yeah, we had, it came out of committee, I believe, 10 to 3 in the House. And so we got it very easily down to the floor. Now, I will just point out, with new leadership, we are able to set up the committees. The Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader basically had to work together and get those committees set up. They work together, get those committees set up, and then they appoint the chairs of those committees. A lot different makeup than what we had in the past. And I believe we tried as leadership to have a very fair process. We tried to have people come into committees and be able to testify, give both sides a chance to weigh in, give them equal time. I think we had a fairer process than what I have seen in the last 2 years. And that is a very key part of this. So you not only need the numbers, but you need the committees to get them out. So we got it out of committee 10-3. It went down to the House floor 10-52. We had Representative Tony Randolph. I'm not going to let him live this down. He was gone that day. So we had 49 yes votes and I believe 19 no votes. We were missing Tony. If we would have had Tony, we would have had 50. The overwhelming majority that 10-52 passed the House that day.
When it got over to the Senate side, it got a little dicier. It wasn't a guaranteed slam dunk win. So, Senator Lobke, can you tell us a little bit about the dynamics going on the Senate side?
Well, the Senate was always the greatest area of concern because that was always the Iron Curtain, the
brick wall, if you will, the last several years. We were never able to get past their committees, and we were never able to have a fair hearing on the floor, and never knew where a lot of our senators stood. Due to the influx of new legislators this year, we ended up with a glut of bills coming in later than normal, and so it held up the committee hearing for 1052, as that was a House bill. Each chamber needs to push out the bills that originate within their own chamber by a certain date. That's referred to crossover day. So when that committee was coming up after crossover day, we really geared up because we knew this was the one hurdle that we'd never been able to jump, and we have to succeed here. Every day could have been the last. But as long as you're still in the game, you still have a chance to win the war. And so we had a great showing in the Senate State Affairs Committee. We were able to successfully come out of there with 1052, a 7-2 vote. But what the most remarkable thing was, over 150 landowner South Dakota citizens showed up, and we had four people deliver very short, succinct testimony. Each one of those landowners got up and told them where they were from, their name, and to vote yes in the form of a Me Too. It was one of the most humbling experiences of my entire life to see people participate in their government because it is their government. And we successfully came out of the committee and went on to the Senate floor. In the Senate floor, you know, you never know. I've learned one thing. You never know what's going to happen for sure until it happens. Had a good feeling about it, but the lobbyists were covering the place thick. Many landowners showed up to talk to their own senators and other senators on their behalf. It was a great debate on the floor. The arguments were strong because we're not against economic development. We're not against projects. We're pro-Constitution. That's what we are. And if we don't have that held, none of that other stuff means anything. It was a great moment that we came off of the Senate floor by a vote of 23-12. And if then you start worrying about, is the governor going to sign it or not? And it was one of the proudest moments in my life that 2 days later, our governor, Larry Roden, did in fact sign it. 1052 is now law. We have way better landowner protections than the state ever has before.
I'd like to add to Mark's comments on that Senate committee. It was 31 minutes of Me Toos that were on the floor that day. And you had people crying as they walked up to the microphone. It was a proud moment. It was a humbling moment. It was much needed for the landowners. They needed this relief. It was time. It was the right thing to do. The other thing that struck me through my tears that day was this never should happen in the state of South Dakota, where citizens for 4 years have to go and beg for rights that are already theirs. It's unacceptable. I've noticed some commentary from the cheap seats and other legislators who aren't too happy with the session. They think that nothing got done that was of consequence, and they're trying to rewrite the narrative. But really, I would actually argue not only was 1052 quite a poignant end to the session, but the entire nation is watching what's happened in South Dakota. This isn't just here. I've gotten emails from New Mexico, Oklahoma, Missouri, Minnesota, all across the country, where there's land grabs happening, just like we've experienced in South Dakota from private companies. And South Dakota now serves as a beacon of hope for other places. We are leading the nation. South Dakota is the place where we take our stand and say freedom lives here. It lives here. Now, I will say, in addition to that victory, there were some bills that our great legislators were able to defeat that were absolutely betrayals to the South Dakota citizens. Two bills, Carla can take whichever bill she wants to talk about, or she could talk both. But there were two bills that were so egregious, I couldn't even believe we were discussing them. One was a mini SB 201. That was HB 1261, is that correct? Yep. Carried by Drew Peterson and Sidney Davis. That bill basically read just like 201, where it absolutely would have changed the rules in the middle of the game. I'll let Carla talk a little bit about the nuances of that bill and how it was quickly defeated in the legislature. The second bill that was quite offensive to me was SB 198, which was also handedly defeated. That was carried by Senator Melhoff, who thought instead of a compromise where 1052 was you can say yes to a project and you can sign an easement and you can do business with good faith negotiations, or you can simply say no, thank you, go around, I don't want to participate in your Green New Deal. That was the compromise bill. His idea of a compromise is a landowner facing condemnation should be forced into mediation and have to talk with their bully and their oppressor with the gun on their hip. Give me a break. So, Carlo, I want you to talk about those bills, what it means that you were able to go on the defense and block some of these terrible things from coming to the South Dakota citizens.
Well, I'll talk about SB 198 a little bit. So that bill was basically, like Amanda said, that was going to force, the very first time I read it, what I took out of it was this is going to force a landowner who does not want to mediate. It's going to basically force them into mediation. Now, if you will not mediate, they're able to take that to the court when they go to court and say, we tried X, Y, and Z. It was this date. We made this phone call. We showed up at their door and they wouldn't meet with us. And so they were able to then bring that to the court and say, we tried. This is how the judge would say, well, why are you wasting my time? You didn't even take time to meet with this company. And that was thrown out at us time and time again, where you didn't even meet with Summit. I shouldn't have to meet with Summit or Navigator if I do not want to. And if I say no, thank you, they should turn around and go back to their truck. So that was SB 198. Now that did get out of the Senate. It came over to our House State Affairs Committee, and Representative Odenbach is on that with me. We killed that bill in the House State Affairs Committee, and then we turned around and we hoghoused the bill. And if any of you know what a hoghouse is, you basically wipe the bill clean. And what we were able to do, that was before 1052 was heard in the Senate. So Speaker John Hansen said, why don't we put this in our back pocket and we're just going to take the language of 1052 and put it into SB 198. So if you're following me, we had a card up our sleeve, if you will, the ace up our sleeve. And so if 1052 would have failed in the Senate, we would have been able to bring it back to the House where it had already passed. So that's what we were able to do with Senate Bill 198. But it was an egregious bill. I thought it was a stick in the eye to the landowners. And I am very happy to say that went down.
And that bill was amazing to watch Speaker Hansen at work. His experience as an elected official, as a servant leader, his wisdom from years and years of being in peer allowed him to know the technical ability for him to be able to do that. And to have that extra bullet in the chamber on 1052, if you can kill it over here, well, don't worry, we have it over here. It will have its day. That was a powerful, strong sign of support to the landowners, saying when he spoke in January at our landowner rally and he said, this is done. This is not going to happen anymore in the state of South Dakota. He meant it. And he followed through with some brilliant legislation and some brilliant leadership that I think we are very blessed to have in the state of South Dakota. Mark, do you want to talk a little bit about 1261 as well?
1261 was another very unfriendly bill for property rights in the state of South Dakota. 1261 was, in essence, a miniature 201, SB 201. What 1261 would have done is it would have given counties the authority to preempt municipalities and townships' zoning ordinances. The way that they were going to accomplish that is it was going to give the county the ability to issue a conditional use permit that would have allowed any infrastructure to be constructed and operated within public right of way. And now, having been a large park and researched pipeline language for the last several years, the two words that really jumped out at me in that bill was to construct and operate. That's common vernacular when it's pertaining to pipelines. Odds are that was a veiled attempt to get this carbon pipeline put in the right-of-ways in the state of South Dakota via only having to communicate with the county commissions. Divide and conquer, make few of them. It would have made for an easier way. And so, unfortunately, that bill did pass out of our House of Representatives by a very narrow margin. Unfortunately, it did pass out of committee in the Senate, but we were fortunate to defeat it. I believe it was a vote of about 21 to 14 in the Senate, and so that went away. Because That's the other side of the coin. Not only do we need to enact good legislation that is going to protect property rights and the citizens of South Dakota, we have to stay vigilant and make sure that bad stuff does not come through and be to our detriment.
One thing that I think we have learned with all of this is that these things have been in the works for years. They have been laying the foundation, bill upon bill, law upon law, that many sitting in the room would not have known. You're just looking at this right here, just like 1261. That might have made sense for maybe a dairy or something like that. But when you look at the bigger picture, it's like, what are they really trying to accomplish with this bill? And that's why we as legislators always have to be on guard, not just thinking of the specific situation that they might be saying they need this for, but they absolutely have been doing that. They did it in Iowa, and they did it in North Dakota as well.
And that's a perfect segue, Carla, and I'll ask Mark, I guess, this one is, what are the lessons learned? Because this is happening all across the state of South Dakota. There's corridors coming. There's all these projects that are coming. The devil's often in the details on these easements. We see a government that has for the last 4 years at least been kind of out of control. I've got friends in Western South Dakota, Charles and Heather Maud, that are experiencing that right now with the heavy hand of government coming down on a hardworking ranching couple that's homeschooling their kids, trying to do the right thing. And over a fence line dispute, they're facing felony charges and an indictment. So there's one thing I've learned is that for some reason, the government and the donor class, the billion-dollar donor class, really are interested in the Dakotas. They're really interested in what we have, which is the land, the natural resources. And if there's one thing I've learned, the South Dakota farmer and rancher is kind of in the way. And so what do we do to protect ourselves? Not that we're not open for business and we're not open for opportunities, but we want to pick and choose the opportunities that come onto our land and our properties and our backyards, because we too are business owners trying to build something and chase the American dream, not have it taken away from us by the donor class that comes in with the special interests and caters to the politicians. So the lessons that can be learned, what would you advise folks here in Western South Dakota, in Butte County? How do they organize, how do they work together, and how do they make sure that good things happen in their county and not bad?
The biggest thing is to come to the realization you can't accomplish anything by yourself. You need to communicate. I believe on some level in rural America, because it was evident back where I'm from, we've begun to lose our sense of community to a degree. You know, I remember as a kid going to town more. Well, it really seemed to change once the cell phones came in, and all of a sudden we started losing more farms and consolidation was taking place. And I believe that was due to government interference, subsidization, crop insurance. There was a lot fewer of us. Things became a lot more competitive. And if you weren't fighting to survive, you'd go away too. So I think that led to a bit of a degradation in our community, the sense of community in our small towns. And it wasn't until we had an issue like this come in that all went away. McPherson County was the first county in the entire nation to put a moratorium on carbon pipelines in the United States. I remember going to that meeting. It was on the 2nd of January of 2022. And I was nominated to be the spokesperson for it, but I couldn't accomplish anything on my own. There was over 100 landowners from McPherson County sitting there. That's pretty significant, as we only have a population of about 2,200 people. It's been humbling to see that we've all stuck together and still have. And I'm very confident that if we have another issue arise, we're probably not going to see anything near as bad happen. And so the best piece of advice that I can give you is reach out to your neighbors, communicate, talk about it. There are these issues that look to be coming into Western South Dakota. And you have the opportunity to get ahead of it. We got caught flat-footed, and we're never going to be able to change that. But maybe we can communicate with you guys of looking out for it. But the best thing that I can say that works is stick together.
It's really exciting to see that the heart of South Dakota is alive and well, and from townships and counties and the school boards, that the involvement that we're seeing of everyday South Dakotans saying enough is enough. We're going to get involved. We're going to make our communities what we want to see and how we want to live. It's a really special thing. You know, there's much to celebrate. There's been many victories to talk about tonight, but I'm always looking ahead. We've talked a lot tonight how we're just getting started, how there's much work to do. And I'd love, Carla, to talk a little bit about what the next legislative session looks like and what your priorities are and what can we look forward to in the state of South Dakota.
We have a lot to look forward to because we're leading here in South Dakota. And you ask states around, like Amanda has said, we just had some people from South Dakota go to Washington, D.C. to lobby on behalf of some of these tax credits that are coming forward and that we think that DOGE should get rid of. And so they said, you can't believe how people treated us in Washington. It was like we were heroes coming from the state of South Dakota, and that's from Washington. So people are paying attention to us. We're going to continue to try to lead. I know leadership is laying that out for us, like Speaker John Hansen, Representative Majority Leader Scott Odenbach. We continue to go forward. There are things, obviously, we have the Property Tax Task Force. We know that something has to be done with property taxes. I know that. And what one thing that I try to remind people is leadership this year, we just got in. Okay, so we are leading, we are doing things. I think we had a great session, but we know not enough was done with property taxes. And so I hate saying, you know, we had the summer study last summer. I don't believe there was much really that got accomplished with that other than they studied it. This property tax task force will be set up differently this summer. And one thing that I really emphasized in the state affairs when that bill came before us, I'm like, can we come out of this with a bill? We have got to have a bill, something that actually does substantial cuts for people. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like. I don't know if that's eliminating property taxes or if it's reducing them, but we have to have cuts with that. We have to cut. That's the second thing. Our government has gotten too big, and we have to look to cut that. We also need, yes, so South Dakota DOGE, right? So that's being looked at. And also we need transparency in our government. I think every dollar should be accounted for. We should be able to see what all of these slush funds are that are here and there and everywhere. We have the Future Fund right now. I'll just pick on that a little bit. There was a bill this year to defund that did not go through. But we definitely need more oversight on things like that. Right now in that Future Fund, there's $100 million sitting in there. So we need to know where all of these things are. I personally am on the Government Operations and Audit Committee. Our first meeting will be on Tuesday. I know Senator Tappy Howard and Representative Julie Elk are on that as well. They're in the room. And we are going to be moving forward. And one thing that I'm going to continue to do is come to events like this and encourage all of you to get involved in your governments, whether that is in your township, in your county, in your library, in your school board, whatever it is, because that is how we win.
So there's so many things we could talk about. I know Senator Lofke was on appropriations. They're both on the prison task force. But I guess just to close the night, I was going to, first of all, please give them a round of applause for being with us tonight, driving all this way. Yes. Thank you guys so much. I am thrilled and honored to have been invited to speak here tonight. This was an amazing event, full crowd. Thank you for your support. And let's continue to fight for the government that's for the people, by the people, transparent to the people, so that in South Dakota, we continue to say, under God, the people rule. God bless.
While I've got you here, I would love to invite you to check out my website, AmandaRadke.com. Each week, I share my column, this podcast, and new items to shop for farm and ranch families, including my children's books that celebrate agriculture. Use code DUSTYTRAIL to save 15% on your next purchase. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting my small business and for your continued support in keeping me on the road fighting for farm and ranch families. I'm thankful to each and every one of you who tune into this show each week. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so be sure to subscribe, share, and leave a review to let me know how you're liking the content and our guests. Until the next time we meet on the Dusty Trail, I'm Amanda Radke, and this is the heart of rural America.